Hey, welcome everyone to today's ILTA podcast interview entitled AI for Data Management, How It Can Help Call Data for eDiscovery. I'm your moderator today, Monique Siever, Litigation Support and eDiscovery Supervisor at Harper Gray, and I'm thrilled to be joined by our guest speaker today, Jay Lieb, Chief Strategy and Innovation Officer at Reveal Brainspace. Welcome, Jay.
Hi, Monique. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you. So how about you tell us how you got to Reveal?
So how I got to Reveal. Okay, so I've been in eDiscovery for some over 20 years now. It's amazing just how long I've been in it. So just kind of working my way backwards how I got to Reveal. I've been in Reveal now 3 years in August of 2020, so exactly like 3 years ago. Reveal purchased one of the company that I founded called NextLP. NextLP was kind of a early AI company in the e-discovery space. And so they purchased the company. We brought the NextLP technology, which is now called Reveal AI, into the Reveal fold. And that's how we joined the company. So my team and the data science team that we'd built up all joined Reveal, and we've been here ever since through all this journey.
That's awesome. Now, I know that the background prior to that, you had some interaction with some other technology companies and things like that. How did you get to the point where you wanted to start your own company in AI well before everybody was talking about AI?
Yeah, no, it's been a long journey, right? and it's funny, when we started NextLP, which was in like 2013, 2014, in fact, AI, the term AI was actually kind of a verboten term. In fact, we were using things like cognitive computing because the term AI was kind of a failed term. You know, people were using it and then it didn't live up to the hype back in the 80s even, right? The 70s and 80s. Mm-hmm. And so we switched the term cognitive computing until all of a sudden it became more in vogue. AI started to get to the zeitgeist and we, adopted that term. But it kind of goes back to my early days of just litigation support, since this is part of the ILTA family here, right? So I started in lit support back in I know it sounds crazy, but 97. So I started in 97 and I was just working as a database guy for a scanning company in Chicago. And we were scanning documents, we're taking, banker's boxes of paper, scanning them to CD-ROM. And we were giving them to law firms and attorneys and lawyers to take a look at their documents via the CD-ROM, the images. And right around 99, 2000, I started working on this case that involved a lot of something new called email, right? And it was a case where it was involving Microsoft and the DOJ trying to look into breaking up Microsoft. And we were printing out tons of emails, Bill Gates emails, Steve Ballmer emails, all these different emails. And then we were scanning them back. So we went from a digital format, to an analog format. We printed them out back to a digital format. And I said, hey, there's got to be a better way, right? So my first company in 2000, I quit that job and said, hey, there's got to be a better way. So we actually developed the first piece of software, really, or one of the first pieces of software to take emails and electronic files from, all different platforms and put them into databases for lawyers. And so that was like one of the first processes, what we call now called processing. And we didn't even call it e-discovery back then. So that was in 2000. And so if you think, yeah, we're laughing now, right? And it was just called discovery then. There was no E, it was just mm-hmm. discovery. And in fact, I tried to call it digital discovery, but that didn't take. So now somehow the people with the E's won out. So if you think about then, right, the price, the cost per gig was, in the five figures to process a gig of data, right? Mm-hmm. Five figures to process a gig of data. And so now you can think about, what is the price to process data? Well, it's come down dramatically. Why is that? Just simple economics. The explosion of data has just gone, just crazy, right? As mm-hmm. we know, we're just generating more content on a yearly basis than we have in the past history of humankind. So now we've had roughly, plus or minus a few percentage points, the same amount of lawyers and knowledge workers and those types of folks needing to look at those documents. So we have an explosion of data, and we have roughly the same kind of human capacity. So that's where the idea came for was, hey, how can we use this AI? How can we use different types of analytic technologies, cognitive computing, now AI, to kind of even the playing field for humans to catch up with all this data, right? And so that's where it came from. So that's where, again, you know, as an entrepreneur, you gotta, you know, have a little bit of strength in you and say, hey, I'm gonna quit my job and I'm gonna start this again. So that's how we started that NextLP in AI. And that's where it came from was how can we level even the playing field for humans to bring down all that data and get a handle on it.
Very cool, very cool. So what is and is not AI then from your perspective?
That's right. So, you know, it's, you know, AI, people call a lot of things AI now. And so in fact, I like to think of it as a kind of an umbrella term for a package of different types of solutions and technologies, right? But, you know, at the heart of AI, you know, the scientist, John McCarthy, who coined the phrase way back when, I think it was in the 50s, coined the phrase, trying to make machines intelligent, AI, right? Trying to make intelligent machines. And fun fact, one of my co-founders of NextLP at the time had won the John McCarthy Award, which is the highest honor in the AI profession, in the AI community, is this McCarthy Award. Anyway, so he was kind of like the Nobel Prize of AI, if you will. So he had won that award, and he was, and that's how we collaborated to come up with NextLP. But what is AI? AI at the end of the day is a series of algorithms, right? A series of ways of taking in inputs and giving out predictions in some way. That's what AI is. So it's not necessarily true what we call general AI, right? Where the machine is coming up with its own unique ideas, right? We're not quite there yet. What it's doing is looking, finding patterns within data. It's building this algorithm from those patterns, right? And then it spits out predictions on the other side of it. Now, what is not AI is just as interesting because we can kind of trick human beings into thinking that we have AI. So, right, has anyone gone on to a tech support website and you have a little chatbot that pops up and it says, hey, can I help you? And you say, yes, I'm interested in, how do I turn off my machine? And it goes, oh, take a look at this manual. So chatbots can have, now they've kind of matured in the last couple of years now. We'll talk about that in a moment. But chatbots have like decision trees built in, if then types of rules saying, hey, if someone asks for this, give them that. So it's not coming up on its own. It has a lot of pre-canned kind of like talking points on it. So decision trees are not necessarily AI, right? If you went into an Excel spreadsheet and you summed a table up, right? Summed a column, you wouldn't necessarily call that AI as well. So I like to think of it as taking large patterns of data, breaking that down into one algorithm so I can take an object, bounce it against it, and get a prediction of where does that fit? What is the probability it's meeting what I'm looking for?
Okay. So I know that and you guys have this thing called AI models that have so many different types of AI models that you can run your data set through and stuff. So give me a little bit of background about the AI models that you guys have developed.
Yeah. So a lot of what we do at Reveal, a lot of what we do as an e-discovery community is work in the world of unstructured data, right? Text. Yep. And because and one of the interesting things about text is that a lot of times we're getting data from someone else. Someone else wrote these emails, wrote these social media posts, wrote these memos, and now we're left to interpret it, but at scale, right? Mm-hmm. And so again, what if we take the knowledge we have from looking at these documents in the past, right? What if we take the patterns of what we know and we can encapsulate that into an algorithm, right? And so that's the kind of the genesis of our AI model library at Reveal. Is it's really twofold. One is our users can contemporaneously build an AI model very easily, and they'd be able to use that on case to case to case, or on project, or on knowledge work from knowledge work to knowledge work. So they can take what they know, apply it to this algorithm, kind of build an algorithm off of it, and they get predictions on a go forward to speed up either knowledge to insight or to categorize things to really automate tasks for them. But the second piece of the AI model library is our data science team has curated a variety of AI models for kind of common problem sets within e-discovery, looking for like ethical violations, looking for employment issues in the states in particular, looking for kind of potentially privileged content or even more mundane, you know, from a lit sport perspective of how do I just get rid of garbage data, junk data? Mm-hmm. So we've built this library that is available for our clients to use as subscription, but they can add their own models to that. And we have a variety of kind of easy ways to build a model. So we really want to take it and kind of democratize the process of building models.
Very cool. So if you are using one of those pre-generated models, what are some of the questions that you need to ask?
Yeah, you know, so the first thing is with just models in general is, first thing is you have to try to understand what is it trying to achieve, right? What are you trying to solve here? Mm-hmm. And what are the capabilities of it, right? So for instance, if I take a model looking for, you know, ethical violations and I apply it to the New York Times, it's going to have a lot of articles that it's going to hit on. But am I really finding ethical violations? No, it's miscast. So the first thing is trying to set out what it's trying to achieve. The model itself, like we just talked about, is not general AI, right? It's not come up with its own ideas. So it was pre-developed to look for a certain pattern. And no matter what set of data you give to it, you know, assuming that it matches the format, like unstructured text, et cetera, unstructured data, no matter what format it hits, it's going to put a rank of every single piece of information that it sees. So you could say, hey, this thing's garbage, but really, what is it trying to set out to solve? And so the team that, let's use an analogy of review work, right? Mm-hmm. When you first start out a project for review, usually you develop kind of a fact pattern, right? What are we looking for? What are we trying to set out to achieve? What are the kinds of signals in the data that I should mark something responsive or not responsive, right? Mm-hmm. And then the reviewers, the human beings, right? They go out and they try and match what they interpret from that fact pattern, that document, you know, if it's document or maybe it's tribunal, someone just says it out loud. Yeah. And they read a document, they say, and they evaluate it. Does it match this or not, right?
Yeah.
So the person that develops that fact pattern, if they went away and didn't give that, if they went away and someone else steps in and says, hey, what were you looking for here? You wouldn't have any idea because you didn't know why is this marked responsive because you need that fact pattern. So the first thing with AI models is to develop kind of your, what is it trying to achieve? Mm-hmm. And then kind of work backwards from that, right? Mm-hmm. Are you trying to look for relevant documents? Are you trying to look for documents that are contracts, a type of document? Mm-hmm. Are you trying to look for documents about the weather? So from there, you have to encapsulate that description into the model some way. Could be in the title of it, could be in the labeling of it. But it has to be somewhere. And so that's the first question to ask is I'm going to apply a model and what was it designed to look for? What pattern has been trained up on? Yeah. The second thing is to understand, especially AI, what is the AI designed for? So there's different types of technologies that some AI technologies are optimized to read videos and images, right? Mm-hmm. some AI technologies is optimized to predict large-scale numbers, you know, big data. Mm-hmm. Some AI technologies are optimized for speed on unstructured data, right? So, you know, you want it really fast. I want predictions really fast. It may not be as thorough, but it's gonna be fast. Mm-hmm. So you also, when you talk about AI models, you also have to talk about what technologies behind the scenes is applying to and match the data type as well with those technologies.
Mm-hmm. Okay. No, that makes sense. Absolutely. Because you don't want to be using something on one set of documents that is not going to provide what it is that you're looking for. You're just going to end up with, you know, a roadblock. So let's move sort of to generative AI. So how do you see that being useful in the legal review setting?
Well, it's, you know, we're just starting to get the glimpse of the potential with it, right?
Yeah.
So two parts to kind of the generative AI, right? One is the building of that underlying model, right?
Yeah.
And then it evaluates a question, a prompt, and it generates something else, right? Mm-hmm. So, and that's what's so exciting about it, right? Is that mm-hmm. it's able to take an input, this prompt, and it's able to generate something human readable.
Yeah.
So when you think about kind of the beginning of kind of legal document review here, is we start with a lot of data, and first thing that we can do is summarize this, right? Mm-hmm. Is we could take a batch of documents, say, give me the highlights of these documents. I can summarize it. I can summarize it at scale. But not, and we've had a lot of summarization techniques for years and years now, but now we can have kind of an interpretation on top saying, these bundle of documents are about politics. And here are some key milestones in here. And then I can even do a follow-up question, say, who are some of the key players? So I can do things like event extraction, saying, what are some key events that took place in these documents? And it can kind of look for those key events. I can ask for what are some of the key players in it? And I can kind of ask it and it'll bring that back, but summarize it almost in a memo-like format to work with. So we're really at the beginning stage of the ways to extrapolate the use of it. Mm-hmm. But that's we're seeing a lot already in the legal research space. Mm-hmm. We're seeing a lot right now in the contract, kind of legal contract review space, where mm-hmm. if I have a deal room, like an M&A, and I want to say, hey, are there any contracts that have, you know, favored nation clauses in it? It can go ahead and look and bring back those types of documents on it and say, hey, or not just those documents, it can actually bring back that paragraph of data and say, here, mm-hmm. here's the contract and here's the paragraph that we suspect.
Yeah.
And here are more to it, but I can ask it in plain language from a human perspective.
Yeah. And I think that's a really great thing is that in future and hopefully soon, more than later, the natural language prompting and requesting of information from the data set will become more the norm over keyword searches and different things like that, instead of, you know, plugging in just these words if it doesn't match the word or if it doesn't have that in within three of this, whatever. And instead of trying to do that, because people don't speak in that manner anymore, right? People speak so differently. So yes, definitely seeing to that natural language request and prompts and things like that to be able to get your information and summarize it, I think is going to be really, really interesting. So now, do you think, two things quickly, do you think the technology that we're talking about today is going to go the similar dodo bird way of the blockchain technology that everybody was really excited about? Because we're really excited about all the AI and what it can do and stuff. And then blockchain came in and did the same sort of thing. And then it went
for right? Yeah, well, for the record, I'm still bullish on blockchain. I think it can be, I really am. It's just going to take some time. There's a lot of infrastructure that has to take place mm-hmm. on that. I think it can be a game changer when it comes to things like contracts and real estate and actually transformative in some developing nations as well, as far as property ownership. But that's another story. That's another podcast. It's right. No, I mean, yes, I think that the generative AI, we're really at the beginning of this, mm-hmm. and the game changer from the way to interact with the computer, just like you said, Monique, where before the way that human beings had to interact with the computer was they would have to tell it the case by keyword search, right? Mm-hmm. And so they'd have to think of, you know, within threes and not that and not this. Now I can just ask it for information and kind of bring it back, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah. I don't believe that it's going to be, I think the adoption is actually going to be rapid. And if you look at things like Gartner, they always have this, they have this kind of maturity level of technology and they say, hey, we're at peak hype cycle, right? Meaning everyone's talking about it. And then on their kind of maturity level, it's like you go from peak to this like drop.
Yeah.
So, well, why is that? Because people experiment with it and kind of iterate through that. And so we'll have a little bit of that. But some of the key tenets of it, as far as interactivity, summarization, extrapolation, automation, right? Mm-hmm. All these things that are taking place is what we actually need in e-discovery, in kind of in the legal vertical, legal technology vertical. So I absolutely do not think it's going to go away. Now there'll be some bumps and bruises along the way, but no, I do not think it's going away.
Great, that's good news. And the last question I have, just quickly, what about the emotional intelligence and sentiment analysis? Do you think we're going to be able to get really good information from AI going forward because it's going to learn emotional and sentiments? You think?
Yeah, well, we've actually been, I think we're one of the pioneers in e-discovery here at Reveal. We've been working on this problem set for 8 some odd years. Mm-hmm. And it's actually a pretty well-researched area. And so the answer is yes. The computer does a very good job, actually, of kind of detecting these things. Now, again, the number one question is, what is it trying to solve, right? Yeah. If I take a sentiment analysis. So again, what is sentiment analysis? I'm trying to look for where people are talking about negative events or positive events, or maybe I want emotions. I want happy. I want sad, disappointed, angry, right? Mm-hmm. So if I apply it to, you know, the New York Times, I'm going to get all these articles where people are upset, right? Well, that's not what I'm trying to achieve. So, and not only that, where people get disappointed and they say, hey, just apply the sentiment analysis and there's all your documents. No. What we should do is, like we said, fact pattern analysis, layer is another kind of filter, another kind of sort parameter on top. But the beautiful thing about all these AI technologies is again, we're looking for patterns. Mm-hmm. So our underlying AI can also use the sentiment of the document as a pattern, meaning, you know, what is, what are the signals of a responsive document? What's a signal of a customer complaint? Oh, there's emotions. So I'm going to use that information as well.
Very cool. Thank you, Jay. I think we're about at our time. So I want to say thank you very much for your expertise today. I really enjoyed having you on the podcast. To the audience that'll tune in soon, thanks very much for listening and have a great day, everyone.